From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the first day of April 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett at AgMarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. Mike Tenura will be here from T-Storm Weather in Chicago to discuss the weather forecast. And we'll hear from Frayne Olson, NDSU, North Dakota State University Extension agricultural economist, about yesterday's change in the prospective plantings report and some of the numbers that were really pretty big and kind of eye-popping out of his home state. Corn acres up 69%. We'll find out why on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn today settled 4.5 cents lower at $5.59¾. July at $5.45¼, down 2¼. And December futures up 7 cents at $4.84½. May soybeans $14.234¾ lower. July at $13.96¾, down 31. And November there at $12.63¾, 7.5 cents lower. Bean meal down 13 cents. Bean oil 24 cents lower. And wheat futures soft red down 5¼ for the day. Live cattle futures were about 35 cents lower in the June contract, and lean hogs were up 72.5 cents. Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net now joins us to discuss what happened in Chicago and, of course, yesterday's USDA reports. Thanks for being with us today, Matt.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with the continuation today in Chicago of the trade from yesterday, of course, locked up the limit. What happened as we opened up last night, and how did things continue to trade through the day today?
Yeah, I mean, of course, we gapped higher last night on corn and beans. You know, and the market obviously had a pretty decent pool, especially for corn, that was built up, you know, because there was a whole lot of folks that were wanting to buy in. I mean, you saw massive amount of excitement, you know, just simply due to the fact that these acreages, they just didn't add up. And so essentially what we saw, you know, you're going into a 3-day weekend. First of all, second of all, this weather forecast looks fantastic. I just think a lot of folks said, you know what, we made a lot of money here in the last 24 hours. We're going to pull some of these bets off the table. And so, you know, May beans gave back half their gains, whereas May corn lost, you know, 4 to 5 cents. But regardless, certainly on the front months, we took it on the chin here on Thursday heading into the weekend. But we can't lose sight of the fact what we gained there on Wednesday.
Yeah, new crop, on the other hand, managed to hold on to gains.
Yeah, I mean, we still had a little bit of a gain there on new crop, you know, whereas corn closed almost a dime off the highs. November beans closed around 20, 21 cents off the highs. But regardless, you know, you're still looking at price levels that most people would have given anything for here not too long ago, 482 and 1264. So excellent price levels that we closed out the week with.
What are your expectations after we go through the long Easter weekend?
Well, you know, it sure looks to me like this weather is going to be, you know, providing a little bit of headwind. But, you know, this April supply and demand report next Friday is going to be a very interesting one in that, you know, essentially the USDA is going to be forced, in my opinion, and I know that's a pretty big word, but I've got to think that they're going to have to tighten down their carryout on corn. They probably should on beans, whether they will or not, I don't know, because I feel like they're at pipeline numbers right now. But as far as corn's concerned, you've got to think this export number is going to have to grow. I could see your carryout level getting down to, you know, 1.25, 1.3. And with us printing a 1.502 2 months in a row, it would sure seem to me that it's going to have to come down a fair amount. So I think that'll at least give a little bit of an underpinning to this market. But at the same time, you know, you've got to assume, you know, if you're the trade, that you're going to have big acreage increases due to the fact that we look like we're going to have a pretty darn nice little spring here.
Why?
Well, it just looks to me like the weather is offering us an opportunity. And anytime you get early opportunity and you get good weather throughout the spring, and most of your forecasts are calling for pretty benign weather forecasts, you know, typically you add acreage. And so, you know, we came in here with awfully low acreage numbers, in my opinion, on Wednesday, especially due to the profit margins we already have. Now, we can't lose sight of the fact that wheat picked up a bunch of acres. Well, last fall, you know, winter wheat, you know, picked up almost what, 2.5, 2.6, last fall, you essentially had good wheat prices. At the time, those producers were making that decision. So I can buy into that. If that wheat doesn't look fantastic, though, the assumption has to be that in several situations, you're going to see that ripped up, and probably ended up planting the corn, especially with the fertilizer they already have on. But my personal opinion is whenever, anytime that you see these types of acreage, these types of prices for profit margins, you're going to see total acres continue to impress. And I think this could be one of those years where you add a couple, 3 million. I know it's hard to come by them, but I still think there's a couple, 3 million acres that could show up between corn and beans.
What should farmers do, if anything?
Well, I think a producer, anytime that you get in this situation where you have these types of profit margins, if they don't feel like they've sold enough corn and beans just yet, I highly encourage them to use some sort, of a profitability calculator, because there's no doubt that at 482 and 1264, they can make really good money. And so, one thing that we've been preaching all along, those flexibility, just due to the fact that this could be a pretty wild market this summer, any sort of weather whatsoever, and you could be tacking on major, major money to either corn or bean prices. But I think that a producer needs to get to a third sold in here. I don't see any reason why we wouldn't at these price levels.
Can I come back to the acreage for just a bit? Because soybean acres up 5.4% from what was the final number last year. So that's a little deceiving because there were a lot of prevent plant acres. Corn acres up 0.4%. Winter wheat up 8.8%. So the acreage numbers in general are higher. Maybe not than than last year's March figures, but than the ending numbers last year. Again, why is it that there might be room for growth in these numbers? Is it prevent plant acres that come in? What are you thinking that spurs a growth in those three crops, or at least two of the three crops?
Whenever I look at principal crop acres for 21, according to the numbers yesterday, total principal crop acres were at 316 million acres. Whereas, you go back to a year like 2018, 17, 16, and 15, and you were running 319, 318.3 was the low number. So I still think a couple 3 million acres could end up showing up to the party. Now, we know that this sorghum milo discussion out west has certainly staked its claim. Cotton, I know you and I have talked about that. Anytime you've got cotton pushing this $80 level like we've seen, I've got to think those producers are super hesitant to give up their acreage. But I've got to think that the market's job at this point, is to buy a few acres. And so I guess my personal opinion is if we see $5 corn and $13 beans are in that vicinity, and we're not far from those vicinities right now, I think producers are going to take note. And again, I do think any wheat whatsoever that doesn't look fantastic, I've got to think that this is going to get tore up and planted to corn. But I'm not trying to be bearish by any means. I mean, heck, we're in a great situation, Todd. But if I'm a producer and I'm looking at these types of profit margins in the face, and I don't at least quantify my worst case scenario sometime before that June planted acreage report, boy, I think that I'm really missing the point, because we've got one heck of an opportunity in front of us here.
Hey, thank you.
Absolutely, Todd.
That's Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net. Frayne Olson from North Dakota State University now joins us to discuss yesterday's prospective plantings report as it was released from the United States Department of Agriculture. There were some eye-popping numbers in that report, despite the fact that it showed acreage smaller than what most had expected for corn and soybean production across the whole of the United States. The numbers for both of those crops were up year over year, and in your state, they were up amazingly. 22% more acres for soybeans, 69% more acres for corn. Can you tell me about those from your perspective?
Sure, it's actually relatively easy to explain, because we had about 3 million acres of prevent plant last year, and so and most of those were declared as prevent plant corn last year, which obviously opens things up for additional planting. So we have approximately just under 25 million acres total of planted acreage when you include hayland and a few others. So the increase in soybeans, the increase in corn, most of that's coming from the prevent plant acres. It's dry enough up in this area that I suspect most of those prevent plant acres from last year will get seeded just because of the dry soil moisture conditions. We did get a little bit of switching between crops, you know, because there's about, we raise about, I don't know, 16 or 17 different crops here in the state, and some of them are pretty small acreages. But again, given the very strong futures market prices and contracting ability for corn and soybeans in particular, we are seeing some shifting around of acres. We did see a little bit of a cutback in spring wheat plantings and durum plantings as well. So by the time you add all those up, and I did this for all the crop acres we have in North Dakota, we came out with almost the exact same acreage, planted acreage, that we had last year, if you include, again, the prevent plant provisions.
Yeah, so the last 3 years, you've been at 23.2 million acres, 20.9 last year because of the 3.1 million in prevent plant, and this year USDA has you at 23.1. That's for all principal crop acres.
All principal crops. And when I do my math, I include hayland acres, because there are some alfalfa acres that can be pulled in or dropped out. We also have some of the real specialty crops that I try and include in my math as well. But, if you look at the principal crops, most of that differential, most of the increase can be accounted for by the decrease in prevented planting. So more acres will actually be available to plant, as well as some reduction in spring wheat and durum acreage.
Soybeans have been on the heavy increase over the last decade in North Dakota. Corn, not nearly so much. If I remember the ratio right, about a third as many corn acres as soybean acres in the state recently. Is that correct? And did that hold?
Yeah, about half. Yep. So we have about twice as many soybean acres as we do corn acres.
And did the ratio change this year very much from previous years?
Not much. Nope. No, we're kind of in that same ratio.
Did you expect you expected the increase of corn? Why was that the case? What was it about corn that other than price that made it attractive on those prevent plant acres?
Well, okay. So most in 2020, most of our prevent plant acres in the state were located in the south, in particular the southeast corner, which is where we have our heaviest corn and soybean producing regions. So when we look at bushels produced as well as a density of acres, the southeast corner is where we have the densest acreage plantings.
Geography was in its favor. Yeah.
Geography was in the favor of corn and soybeans. Now, the other thing is if farmers up here, because we've had to deal with this prevent plant issue in the past, when you plant soybeans on last year's prevent plant acres, it usually doesn't do very well. There's some biology behind that we can explain and understand kind of what's going on. So if you're planting corn or a grass, corn or wheat, on prevent plant from last year works much better than a legume. So the preference then would be to have last year's prevent plant acres to go into corn this year, partially because of price, but again, agronomically, it just makes a lot more sense. You have a better yield potential.
Your winter wheat acres were up too.
Just a little bit. We don't have a lot of winter wheat acres in the state. Most of it is spring wheat and durum, which are both spring planted crops. But they were up a little bit, and that was a little bit surprising to me. The other shift that I saw, which was, again, a little surprising, was the decrease in sunflower acres. Usually the oilseed complex, sunflower, canola, tend to follow soybean as the major oilseed. And we did obviously see an increase in canola acres because canola prices are at near record levels. I was expecting to see a few more, or at least the ability for the sunflower industry to hold the acreage they had, but it looked like that slipped a little bit based on the prospective plantings report anyway.
Did the nationwide numbers for corn and soybeans and wheat meet your expectations?
You know, they did surprise me. I was We were obviously expecting an increase in corn and soybeans, but I think myself, as well as most analysts, were looking for higher numbers, a larger increase. And I guess my surprise was I was looking for quite a bit larger soybean plantings than what we got out of the report. I do think, and again, coming back to what happened last year, I do think some of that might be a function, I might be grasping here, but it might be a function of the large prevent plant acres we had nationwide last year. Because nationally, we had about 10 million acres prevent plant. And I think there might be some farmers, as they were going through and filling out the survey from USDA, had some uncertainty about what was going to happen with those PP acres. Were they going to be dry enough to be able to seed this spring, or were they going to stay wet enough that they're not going to be able to seed it? And so I think there was a little bit of fudging went on with or uncertainty because of nationally the large prevent plant. But it was a surprise. I was expecting some bigger numbers, as most people were.
So in your opinion, the prevent plant played a big role in this, and I suppose farmers tend to plant regardless. They could come back into the rotation.
Yeah, and I do think up here in North Dakota, again, our soil moisture conditions are very dry, as well as in most of South Dakota. And so my view is those acres that were PP'd in North Dakota, South Dakota, I think will come back into production. But we had other prevent plant areas across the nation, and I'm not sure, again, depending upon how the spring rolls out and what kind of weather we have, those may or may not be available to plant. And so I think there was some again, question marks in farmers' minds saying, well, there's some acres here I'm really not sure what I'm going to do with yet. But we will wait and see. And again, spring planting conditions and the weather will make a difference. If it's an early season, like it looks it's going to be, there is a preference and a tendency for those corn acres to go in first. And if things are going well and going smoothly on the margin, you may end up planting a little more corn. The same thing with spring wheat acres up here, because it's very, very dry in most of the state. If we can get in early, spring wheat is a well suited for the growing conditions here, and tends to do a little better in drier conditions than something like corn. Corn is much heavier water user than spring wheat is, and so there might be some subtle shifting of acres as we get into the spring's work and when the dirt finally starts flying.
Hey, thanks so much.
Well, thank you. Appreciate the chance to visit.
Indeed. Frank Olson is with North Dakota State University Extension, where he serves as an agricultural economist. Let's take a look at the weather forecast now with Mike Tenura. He's from T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being here today.
Great being here, Todd. I hope you're having a good day.
I am having a good day, although, admittedly, I looked out at the thermometer, and I want to say it was 35, and it wasn't all that long ago. So it feels pretty cold. What can you tell me about the forecast here in the United States?
Well, it is pretty amazing how it's so cold. We even had lake effect snow along the eastern shores of Lake Michigan, and there was even an inch or two of accumulation on the far south side of the city. So pretty unusual to have that happening after all the nice weather we've had lately until now. But it does turn a lot warmer as we move out of this period. We'll see temperatures in the 60s, 70s, even the 80s and 90s on the plains by the time we get into early next week. So a very rapid and significant warm-up is on the way. Now, it's not going to last for all that long, maybe 3, 4, or 5 days, which is certainly fantastic at this time of the year to have some very nice weather like that at the start of April. But once we get into the middle of next week, the system comes on in and that will cool things off. Now, we're not going to turn cold like we are today, but it will return to more typical levels with highs in the 50s and 60s, and maybe even a little colder than that in a few spots on occasion. So basically, the warm weather that's coming up is not something that's going to last for a long period of time. There will be some rain with that, as we mentioned, but we don't think there will be large and heavy rain events with the setup that's coming up. What we're looking at is basically some systems moving on through the central U.S., but more or less disconnected from the tropical air mass that's off to our south. And because of that, we don't think we'll see heavy rain events, but we will see showers and even thunderstorms here and there starting up in about 5 days.
So after that, what do things look like in your opinion?
Well, pretty much more of the same. It is challenging to look more than about a week out in the pattern that we have coming up, but it looks like more systems are out there, but it also looks like they're going to be disconnected from the jet stream. And it also looks like on top of that, like we won't have a real warm pattern like we're going to experience later on this weekend and early next week. So pretty much high temperatures in the 50s and 60s, some rains here and there, but probably not gully washers.
Sounds like normal for the month of April. Is that about right?
Yeah, I would argue that that sounds about right. The only thing you might want to consider, though, is that with the lack of rain coming up over the next 5 to 6 days, it could even be a bit drier than normal by the time we look at it over the first 2 weeks of April, but pretty much getting pretty close to normal.
Is there very much geographic difference across the Corn Belt from the Dakotas to Kentucky?
Well, certainly chances are higher with eastward extent. So if you're in Illinois, Indiana, or Ohio, that's where some of the best chances would be for decent rainfall. And then especially to the south from there into parts of Kentucky, Tennessee, and Arkansas, where it recently turned pretty wet. Once you move to the west, there are also chances for rain and even thunderstorms. But again, with that lack of humidity in place, it will be a little more difficult for a big rain event to show up. Now, you need to keep in mind, though, that there was a lot of rain earlier in March, and so most of the central U.S. is looking pretty good from a topsoil and a subsoil moisture standpoint. The only exception is in North Dakota and northwest Minnesota, where it's been bone dry for a long time now, dating all the way back into last summer. So a drought is certainly in place in those areas, and then extending into Canada, and rain chances there don't look all that great either.
What are growing conditions in the forecast look like for parts of South America?
Well, the big thing we're starting to monitor is corn. Brazil is now growing their second corn crop, which is the main export of corn that they have for the country. And at the moment, things are okay. We have a few dry spots in Goiás and Mato Grosso do Sul. That's affecting about a quarter of the crop, but the other 75% is looking okay at the moment. The concern that we have is that there's not a lot of rain coming up for the southern half of the growing belt going forward. There will be some decent rains in Mato Grosso, and that's about a third to even 40% of the crop. So they're going to be looking okay by mid-April. But the rest of the crop is going to be dealing with some dryness. And typically, if you want to have a really big crop, you know the formula. You need a lot of rain, and you need cool temperatures. We're not going to be seeing a lot of rain for everybody, and that is something that we're going to have to watch. Once we get beyond the middle of April, then rainfall really starts to diminish from a climatological standpoint as the dry season approaches. So if these rains don't verify over the next couple of weeks in Mato Grosso, then we're going to have to start thinking about this even more. But the basic point I want you to take home this weekend is that we need to watch corn in Brazil because it is drying a little bit and the forecast is not ideal.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yep. Talk to you next week.
That, of course, is Mike Tenura. He's with T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.